Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Back here on the Roto Experts Weekend Edition, Scott Englund, George Kurtz. Coming up this hour, former Arizona Diamondbacks player, Rusty Ryle, longtime friend of the network and fantasy baseball analyst, will join us at 10:40 a.m. Eastern Time. He'll give us his thoughts on Jacob DeGrom and also Christian Villanueva. Can he keep this up after his hot start? Scott Engel and George Kurtz. You can follow me at Scott E. Roto X and George at George Kurtz. It's very, very easy, even for the likes of somebody like Cha-Cha who may be listening. He's George Kurtz. You follow him at George Kurtz. So it's not too challenging. And make sure you go to rotoexperts.com right now for some great off-season fantasy football coverage and also our fantasy baseball weekly planner for Brandon C. Williams. You can check that out as well as Cam Giangrande's new column on Diamonds and Gems, on what players may be traded in Major League Baseball right now down the line and how it can affect your fantasy team, some bold predictions, and how to prepare for those as well. And, of course, George does the closer report every Tuesday, a labor of love for George for a long time. George, how long have you been with Roto Experts now?
Oh, you would probably know better than I would. I lose track of these things.
I'd say between five. You came over?
Well, Scott, if I knew what year, I could probably do the math, and I would know exactly
how
long.
Trying to help you here, my friend.
I would say between 5 and 7 years, offhand.
Okay, so
I'll give you a range.
Six to be official.
We'll say six. There you go.
We'll go in the middle, which would put it about 2012, which sounds about right. I think it might be 2011, though. I'll have to go back and check the archives. So if you click on the MLB tab on rotoexperts.com, though, you can check out the latest roundup from Inside Injuries on Thursday. And the headline is, why the Mets should DL Jacob DeGrom. And what they say about DeGrom here, now, when I was on for about 15 seconds with Craig Carton on the morning on Thursday before he trampled me off the air because he didn't hear what he wanted to hear, but right now I got the microphone and he's nothing he can do about it. I was trying to explain to him, he was asking me, you know, the Mets were saying that when the press release went out Thursday morning, they didn't expect him to miss any starts. The Daily News said, the New York Daily News, our partner, said that Christy Ackert said, beat reporter said they expected to miss 4 starts. So he's saying, which one do you believe? And I said, look, if I'm going to lead anywhere, it's going to be with Inside Injuries because, you know, they've been a partner for us for a long while. And a lot of what they said during football season, we didn't want to believe when it first came out. And it turned out to be true. They really know what they do over at Inside Injuries. So I was trying to say whatever Inside Injuries goes with is what I'm going to go with. And they were saying that the optimal recovery time was 2 weeks. So if Inside Injuries says that, that's good enough for me. There are not a lot of people who come on and say, oh, how could Inside Injuries know? Because they didn't see the actual person and examine them. The people who work for Inside Injuries are medical experts in the sports field who have seen these type of injuries, who speak to other doctors. They have doctors on staff. They have actual NFL team personnel on staff, pro sports team personnel. So they've either spoken to people have seen these type of injuries or they examine them themselves. If you want to go to insideinjuries.com and check out the medical background, there's no way you can doubt it. Just because they haven't seen Jacob DeGrom doesn't mean I don't believe it, because the people that work for them or the people they're in contact with have all seen similar type of injuries to know what the outlook is. So I'm going to go with what injury says. Now, DeGrom was injured on Thursday, I believe, and so about a two-week optimal recovery time from Thursday. And inside injuries on the Roto Experts website says his elbow scans came back clean. There's no structural damage. He could be cleared in time to make his next start, and the Mets have already announced that he had a great bullpen yesterday and that he's going to start Monday against the Cincinnati Reds. Inside injury said the smart move would be to place him on the 10-day DL to give his arm time to calm down. Even all the ligaments are intact, it could be a mild biceps or elbow strain that needs time to fully heal. Trying to play in 5 days, even though this is a minor injury, is a smart long-term decision. There's no need to take a risk here. Still, the Mets are throwing him out tomorrow against Cincinnati, and they said they're not going to let him swing, they'll let him bunt or whatever, or take pitches. Knowing the Mets' medical history, I think a lot of people on the outside think this is a mistake, and I'm not too comfortable with it myself, but as a fantasy player, all you can do is put him in the lineup and hope for the best, because if he is able to make it through, he's going to get two turns this week.
Yeah, that's the key. All right, fantasy-wise, you're starting him because, you know, he's a two-star pitcher. If he was a one-star pitcher, I'm probably not. I agree. Not that it's because of inside injuries, but the first thing I thought of was it's a 10-day deal. He'd miss one start. If the Mets have an off day, right. Then technically doesn't really miss it. You know, why aren't you DLing him? The Mets know their history. It's May. This is not September or even late August where you need to start. You need to win a game in the pennant chase and all that. It's one start. Why wouldn't you DL him? You know, why take the chance with, you know, a major part of your rotation, major part of your team, your future? I don't understand this either. I would have DL'd him gladly here. I do think it's a mistake. Even if he's healthy, I think it's a mistake. Once again, why are you rolling with dice here? I don't understand this with the Mets. And I wonder this. If things were reversed there in the season, and what I mean is the Mets got off to a terrible start and were now in the middle of playing great like they were early on, would this decision be different? You know, would they, oh, you know, we're playing so well here, we can win without him. We'll give him the one start off. You know, I always wonder how much that plays into a team and their thinking here. And, you know, something that's that came up, of course, on Twitter, and I knew this was coming. I don't think I know your feelings on this, Scott. Should there be a DH in both leagues? Should pitchers hit?
All right, before you change the subject here, and you do that to me a lot when you don't want to talk about a certain subject anymore, it seems. The thing is with the Mets is a lot of people blame the training staff. And from the way that I understand it, you know, being on the inside, is that the training staff makes a recommendation to the manager and the general manager, and then it's really up to the manager and the general manager to decide. It's really not the training staff saying, okay, he can make his next start, go out and have him do it. They give him the information, and then the team personnel has to make a decision from there. I think, like you said, it's best for the Mets to play cautious here. And because if they lose DeGrom, right now, you know, Matz is not reliable. Wheeler's not reliable. Harvey's gone. Mickey Callaway would like to keep Seth Lugo and Robert Gazelman is in the bullpen. He really feels like, especially Lugo, has been very, very effective out of the bullpen. From a fantasy perspective, you just have to you have to say your prayers and put him in the lineup.
I already said this. So, two-start week, I'm putting him in. I have him in a league or two. He starts for me. If it was a one-start week, I would probably...
What's your level of concern on a scale from 1 to 10, though?
It doesn't matter. The two-start week. It's the Jacob DeGrom. I'm going to have to... I know this is really...
Can you answer
to say
the question,
I'm going to have to trust... It's a two-start week. I am not concerned. It doesn't matter. I can be 100% concerned. He's a two-star pitcher. He's in my lineup. It just doesn't matter. If it was a one-start week, this would be a much better conversation.
I'm not saying you don't start him. I agree with you, but do you start him with any level of concern? Of course, you put him in there. You have to.
What is
your level of concern, though, while you're doing that?
I'm very concerned. I already said this. But it doesn't matter. I'm not going
to
lose sleep over it because, once again, two-star pitcher, it's something I have to do. Unless
what's your level of concern on a scale of 1 to 10?
It could be 1,000. I would say it's a 7.
I'm just curious as to what it is. Thank you.
I would say it's a 7. But I've already said I'm concerned about it. I would have put him on the DL on the Mets. It would have been I don't understand why the Mets aren't being like every other team. When in doubt, guy's got a bad thumb DL, got a hangnail DL. You're missing one start. It's a 10-day DL. The DL is made for this. I mean, it's absolutely made for this new DL. To where your pitcher doesn't feel good, put him on the DL. You're not missing anything. So I don't understand what the Mets are doing here. I don't know why they're pushing him in May. May 6th.
It seems like days ago. That even though the field manager has changed, the approach has not in terms of the injuries.
This is what Alderson believes. He's an old-time GM. You play through everything. It doesn't work with today's players. But it never should have worked with pitchers. I mean, I just don't understand this, and I forget the pitch I was bringing this argument up about. But in today's game, where we coddle everybody, and your pitchers are really the ones that have to be coddled. You're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on your top starters here, and DeGrom will probably be in that range eventually when he's up at free agency. Yet, you push him through stuff like this. I'll say it again. If this was August or September, I don't have a problem with this then. All right, listen, you need to start. You know, every game matters here. It's May 6th. You have 100-plus games left. Even if every scan they took says, oh, he's fine. Why wouldn't you give it, as Inside Injury said, he may have something else down there that wasn't detected. Why not give him another week, which is what the DL would give him, pretty much, another week rest. It's a week. It's one freaking start. But fantasy-wise, I don't care. He's scheduled for two. Unless I have eight other guys who are going to have two starts that week, which is highly unlikely, he goes for me. So it doesn't matter what my worry is. I know he's in my lineup. I just know it. I don't care. I could be worried 1,000 on a scale of 1 to 10. I could be 10 plus 1,000. It doesn't matter. Because he's going to be in my lineup because he's a two-start guy. If he was a one-start guy, then I know what I'd be doing. He'd be up and I'd be listing all my starts. DeGrom, you know, Smith, Jones, and who they're playing, where they're playing, and then putting him a number on who I think have the best starts. And whether or not I would start him in that situation would go down to where his number ends up lying. You know, in a head-to-head league, I probably wouldn't start him. And if it was a one-start week, because I'd be afraid he'd go 3 innings. And that's it. He's done in a one-start week. But in a two-start week, my level of worry just doesn't matter. He's going for me. There's no chance on earth he's not going for me. Because, once again, it's a two-start week. I'll have to chance it. And I say it makes me laugh when I say I'll have to trust the Mets medical staff. But I will. But I think this is all on Alderson. I don't think this is on Callaway. I think he's making this decision. Because, once again, you would think Callaway would also be leaning towards DL. He's a former pitching coach. So he's on that side. He knows what these guys go through. So I think this is on the GM. I don't think this is on Callaway at all. I also think, you know, it's not about pitching, but I also think this is why Adrian Gonzalez is still playing first base. Because the GM signed him. And they won't go away from that.
I agree with you about, and I think it's good insight, the GM making the medical decision because the field manager has changed, but the outlook on injury still hasn't. I disagree with you about Gonzalez because, you know, talking to people around the Mets, they don't see it like we see it from the outside. From the outside, you see like, look, Gonzalez is done. Why not have him play, have Nemo in the outfield and Bruce at first base? It's not that simple. They brought Gonzalez in because he's a veteran presence, clubhouse leader, and the big thing is that his defense is much better than anybody plays at first base. They're going to find a way to keep Gonzalez in the lineup because they still feel like as long as he's healthy, he can get key hits, he can play better defense, and that he can be a stabilizing presence on and off the field. So, you know, especially playing with those young guys. So Gonzalez is not going away.
Well, I don't think he is going away. Once again, GMs hate to admit they made mistakes. And signing Gonzalez, I don't care what he signed for, was a mistake. It buried Dominic Smith. Whatever you think about him, they buried him. You knew he had no chance, and he got hurt anyway, so it didn't matter. And they'll keep going with Gonzalez until, you know, they acquire somebody else. I acquired this guy to play over him. You can say everything you said is true. I'll believe it that he's a much better defender than anybody else they put there, Jay Bruce. I get that. The veteran leadership, you need to win games here. All right, you're playing worse players. Right, he has no – he's got a back injury. We've seen it with David Wright. You know, if you're in New York, Don Mattingly, same thing. It zaps everything once you have that kind of injury.
That's why I didn't draft Miguel Cabrera.
Well, yeah, I didn't draft Miguel Cabrera. I went through that last year with him. I was done with Miguel Cabrera. I wasn't touching him. It's a shame. This year it looked like he actually could hit again, but now he's on the DL. He's a broken-down player. But I think of the Mets, like I said, you knew this was coming. And if I was a Met fan, that's why I didn't want them to sign someone like Gonzalez, because he's a veteran, a very good veteran, or used to be very good. He's going to get every chance on the planet to prove he can't play, which he's done now, and they'll still stick with him because the GM won't want to admit, because he won't want to hear it from everybody. Oh, we knew this was going to be a mistake. We told you, and he did it anyway. And I think this is what's going on with Allison. He won't admit he blew it with Gonzalez. He'll keep him in there longer than he should. I don't think this is Callaway's decision at all. As far as playing, he may tell him, oh, he's good in the clubhouse, he's a good, good fielder, that's great. You know, if he was a shortstop, you might be able to live with that. First base, you need pop, and you're not getting anything from Adrian Gonzalez.
Yeah, but what people don't see from the outside, too, and, you know, is big in baseball, is intangibles. And, you know, from an intangible perspective, they feel like Gonzalez is a real good influence on the young players. You know, they almost want to bring him in as a player coach. I was talking about this with Gabe Marcy on Game Time Decisions. A lot of times from the outside, fans will go, why do they bring in this guy? And they'll say, because they feel team chemistry is very important.
It is, but when you have so many other positions not hitting, you're not getting much out of Rosario, you're not getting much out of Conforto, and you can't afford a position that's just a zero right now. Catches a black hole. You wonder why you're losing. And he just named four of your nine positions here that you're not getting anything out of offensively.
Conforto's going to hit, though.
I agree.
Come around.
I think Conforto's a very good hitter. But when you got so many guys struggling, you can't afford to have a guy struggling that you knew was going to struggle. You know, the Mets right now aren't doing anything to improve their offense. I mean, there are catches out there. Go acquire one.
Yeah, they certainly need a catcher. We'll talk a little bit about the Matt Harvey conundrum coming up next, and former Major Leaguer Rusty Rile a little bit later in the hour. Here on the Roto Experts Weekend Edition with Scott Engel and George Kurtz.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back here on the Roto Experts Weekend Edition, Scott Engel and George Kurtz talking fantasy baseball. So the other big story in New York this week was the Mets designated Matt Harvey for assignment officially yesterday in recalling Hansel Robles. And this was, it seemed, you know, I was at Citi Field during the week, and Sandy Alderson had a press conference where he said he really doesn't like surprises, like what they saw about Matt Harvey in page 6 of the New York Post. But this is bigger than this. You know, it's USA Today ran a really good column on it about, and so did Sports Illustrated, where Tom Verducci talked about it was just a baseball kind of thing. But USA Today talked about the fact that Harvey really was a loner and didn't have any friends in the clubhouse. And, you know, I've been in the Mets clubhouse environment since 2010. And to me, you know, talking to people during the preseason and doing my fantasy baseball insider report, the take that I got was that Harvey still had that Dark Knight mentality, but no longer had the Dark Knight kind of stuff. And if you look at the stats on Fangraphs for velocity, you're talking about a guy who was consistently hitting 97 in 2013 and now was hitting about 93. Now, when you talk about Tommy John surgery and thoracic outlet syndrome, of course, that can have an effect on how a guy starts. But the problem with Harvey is, you can see him by him being a Boris client and refusing to accept the designation to the minors, fighting with the team in 2015 about what his inning limit was going to be. Ultimately, in the World Series, you know, barking at the pitching coach, Dan Worthen, that he wanted to go back out there, which I think endeared him to a lot of fans at the time, you know, who follow the team. But Matt Harvey, you know, going into this spring was no longer the Dark Knight stuff-wise. And, you know, the word I was getting, you know, around the Mets is he had to mentally adjust and realize he wasn't that superhero anymore. And really, he didn't take the demotion well. He hasn't worked at all to change his mechanical approach or the kind of pitches that he threw. And, you know, he's not, Keith Hernandez made a good point this week when he said, when you've been a power pitcher for 28 years, and you dominate people, it's very, very difficult to change. But some of the good ones have changed. Like Mickey Callaway has indicated that he sent guys like Cliff Lee and Carlos Carrasco to the bullpen, and they've remade themselves, and Pierce Harvey was unwilling to do it. And ultimately, that cost him with the Mets, and he's going to have to remake himself anywhere else that he goes.
Wow, where to start here, Matt? We can do a whole show on Matt Harvey. Now, everything you said is true. I mean, every single thing is true. About the remaking thing, I mean, that's 100% true. He now has to become a pitcher, not a thrower. Yes, a couple of years ago, he could throw the ball by people. It didn't matter where he put it. He could have put it down, right down Broadway, up high. It didn't matter. Now he has to become a pitcher, move the ball up, down, in, out. He has to want to make that adjustment. How long that takes, anyone's guess. You know, I was one who thought, I thought CC Sabathia was done because he had a hard time making that adjustment. He wasn't, when he lost it because of age more than injury, he lost it because of that, and he was still trying to throw a 90-mile-per-hour fastball by people, and he was getting crushed. It took him a couple of years, but he made the adjustments. Lots of off-speed stuff, hitting your spots. When has Harvey reached that mentality? Because he's only pulling 93 on average, which means you should still be able to get major league hitters out if you become a pitcher. You have to mix in your off-speed stuff more. You have to hit your spots. Yeah, keep batters off balance. I do think he needed to change the scenery, so I think he had to leave New York. I think most players in his situation probably would have turned down the minor league assignment. We've seen this over and over again. This is not new. But I think the fact that everything that had gone on in New York, and you left out several things we could have put up there too, I think a change of scenery was needed for both sides. I don't blame the Mets for giving him a shot this season. He was only making, what, $5.35 million offhand? So that's, you know, that's scratch in today's game. So no big loss to the Mets there. I think they did need to make sure that he was going to become the Dark Knight or become a useful pitcher for them. And it's obvious he wasn't. Whatever happened in San Diego, him partying the night before. But he wasn't pitching well. He did need to go down to the minors for the Mets to work it out. And he refused. And the ironic thing is, whoever signs him, I have to assume they're going to want to put him in the minors anyway. Because if he wants to be a starting pitcher, that's where he's going to have to work it out. Unless he's going to sign with, you know, an also-ran team just for the hell of it. But no one's giving him a multi-year deal, so why would an also-ran team sign him? You know, do they think he's going to sell tickets to put him in the rotation right away and get beat up? So if he wants to sign with a competitive team and as a starter, not go back to the bullpen, I got to assume he's down to in the minors anyway. Because I really can't see a team like the Rangers, Texas Rangers, Toronto Blue Jays, a team that thinks they might be able to compete for a wild card spot, put him right in the rotation right away. What's that going to prove? So he's in a tough spot. I think it's a shame because I was a Harvey believer. I was a Harvey believer coming into the season. I think he still could be useful. Obviously, I was wrong. But I think it's also a shame baseball-wise that we've lost this talent. Because I've said this many times, back when he was the Dark Knight, he was must-watch TV, you know, or at the game, go to a start, because he was a no-hitter waiting to happen. It was incredible talent. It was Roger Clemens in his prime. I mean, it's what it was. I mean, he was fantastic. You know, he had that mentality, he had everything you needed, and he was a fun watch. He's a guy I would have paid to see. And now we've lost that talent due to the Tommy John, the thoracic surgery. And that's a shame. I hope he figures it out. But his mentality is going to have to change completely to realize he's going to need help. He's going to have to listen to his pitching coaches. He's going to have to become a pitcher. And, Scott, I'll be honest, I have no idea if he'll be able to make that adjustment.
Yeah, you mentioned Clemens. He grew up idolizing Clemens. kind of, you know, his father, you know, Verducci was saying that that his mechanics were very based on Clemens, as taught through his dad. But, you know, thoracic outlet syndrome is something very, very hard to come back from. You know, if you do the research throughout baseball history, Tyson Ross seems to be finally making some strides and coming back from it. But there's been a lot of pitchers who just haven't been able to regain their form. So I think that's a big part of it. I think the problem for Harvey was it was mental. It's, you know, I saw him last week in the clubhouse, and I noticed him. I said to myself, I said, Matt Harvey has never walked around a major league clubhouse. He only struts. You know, Harvey walks with a strut. He puffs his chest out, and that's how he carries himself. You know, he's not well-liked by the media, and there are a lot of his teammates who either don't like him or can't get close to him. You know, they felt like he was a loner, a standoffish kind of guy, that he really didn't have any friends in the clubhouse. I don't know if that's not true, because I've observed him being tight with at least one teammate, it seems, you know, from my observations, although I've heard also, you know, rumors that there are some other top players in the Mets organization that just didn't like him, period. And, you know, he always had that superstar mentality around him. He really bought into the whole being a celebrity in New York kind of thing. And then when his play didn't match it, it didn't seem to jibe anymore. And some people will say, oh, Scott, you know, you just say that because, you know, Harvey doesn't talk to you. It's just like, I had nothing negative to say about Matt Harvey in 2013 when I couldn't get anywhere near him either. And, you know, that's really not what it's all about. You know, CeCe Sabathia, you bring him up. It's like CeCe, I've observed CeCe around his teammates. I've observed Harvey around his teammates. And everybody seems to love CeCe on the Yankees. And with Harvey, it seemed like the complete opposite.
It's a shame. I mean, because I think part of the problem is what you described. That Harvey also has to realize he's not, trying to think of a term that wouldn't be vulgar, he's not the top dog anymore. You know, he said he walked out of the struggles. One time he was Matt Harvey, Dark Knight. Nobody could hit him. Best pitcher in baseball. Certainly might have been there. Certainly was up there with Kershaw and Scherzer and those guys at that point in his career. And now, you know, how does he make that a mental adjustment where he's just another guy right now? You know, even if he figures it out, he would never be an ace. It's unlikely he would be an ace anymore. You know, I think his ceiling might be an SP3 in Major League Baseball fantasy. Well, he's probably bottom of your rotation guy, bottom of your staff guy. Sorry, Scott. You know, that sort of thing. So I think when does he make that mental adjustment to not being the guy? You know, and that's got to be tough too, because he was. So to lose it that quickly, and he didn't lose it because of old age, like CeCe did. You know, with the, you know, mileage, all the innings, you know, that he pitched or just caught up to him. For Harvey, he lost because of something I could say is probably out of his control, an injury that no one saw. You know, Tommy John's one thing, thoracic is completely different. And as you said, Tommy John generally, what is it, 85% success rate? Thoracic, I don't even think they have numbers because it's rare for a baseball player to have this. And it could take years upon years. And he has to change his whole outlook. This is not an excuse for Harvey, by the way. It's not excuse his behavior. But he has to change his entire outlook to where he's more open now to receiving advice about how to pitch and be a pitcher. You know, and I just don't know. I think he'll make the adjustment eventually, Scott, but I think it could be years down the line. It's easy. It took years. I mean, it literally took years. I can remember discussing him with Tony Sicana and Lenny Melnick. We were arguing about CeCe, you know, about how could he ever figure it out again. And it took him years upon years. And with Harvey, you hope he figures it out sooner rather than later. But I think with his mindset, it's not going to be an easy haul.
Yeah, some people say to me, oh, Scott, are you objective? You only like guys that talk to you. And I say that's a bunch of nonsense. You know, it's not what I base my analysis on whatsoever. Steven Strasburg never talks to me. He carries himself a lot like Harvey, but I feel like Strasburg's earned it, and I'm never going to say anything negative about Strasburg when he's healthy.
Yeah, you know, I could see where people are going, not really with you, but I could see where people would think that, oh, because a player doesn't talk to a certain reporter, that's why the reporter says bad things. And I'm sure certain reporters do. You know,
Here's a good example. I'm sorry. Here's a good example. David Price doesn't talk to anybody. unless he has to. I was all over getting David Price in a rebound season this year. So, yeah, there's guys who have maybe earned the right to strut about the clubhouse, but they don't. Clayton Kershaw, you know, top pitcher in the game, will talk to everybody. Max Scherzer, very, very gracious. Chris Sale, you never know. One day he might talk to you. It's like, you know, the next day he doesn't. And Justin Verlander, you know, gracious guy, will talk to everybody. Zach Greinke is a perfect example. Like, approaching Zach Greinke is like trying to, you know, walk in. It's something you don't do. You learn it, you don't do. But I don't think I've ever said a negative word about Zach Greinke in my entire broadcasting career as a player.
Yeah, you would hope people would have integrity. Just because a guy doesn't like you, that's not the reason why you're writing. You're writing what you you observe, what you feel, not how what the player does to you. It's tough. Cause I can certainly understand a player not wanting to talk, especially after a tough loss. I mean, because you put yourself in that situation. Most of us have played sports. You know, after a tough loss, yeah, I think if you're thinking straight, you might be afraid of saying something stupid because you're angry in the moment. You know, to do it right after a game, you know, it's 15 minutes and the clubhouse is open. So I can see that. But I think you also have to realize it's part of the reason why you get paid money. You know, the big money is to talk to these guys. It's also good for your brand. Yeah, you know, that's how the information gets out there to the public, and that's what they want. And with that, they'll buy merchandise. They'll go to games. That's what gets you paid. I don't think enough players realize that as well. But I say it's got to be tough all around here. I don't think there's anything any reporter, you or anybody else, can do about it. If you write a negative, they're going to say, oh, Scott wrote a negative about this player because this player didn't like him, you know, and that sort of thing. Even if the article's completely true, they're still going to go in that direction. That's the way the American public works. We look for a reason as to why someone doesn't like somebody else, even though it's just the truth. This is what we're reporting. It has nothing to do with any kind of bias. You know, it's just what we're reporting. And generally in fantasy, you know, we are fantasy people. It doesn't matter. What do we tell people at draft time? You know, you can't be a Yankee fan and not draft Red Sox players. You know, you can't be a Cowboy fan and not draft Eagles players. Right. You can't do that. You know, I have plenty of Red Sox on my team. I want to win. I'm much more worried about winning my fantasy league than I'm worried about, being loyal to the Yankees. My fantasy leagues will pay me some money. You know, my loyalty to the Yankees more than likely will not. So I think it's the same thing when when you approach journalism. You know, you have to be loyal to your job. And you write objective. Yeah, I think it's silly. You would hope, and I think most journalists are. You know, I have no doubt there are some who aren't. Yeah, and once again, just playing the numbers game. But you would think that most can separate a player being a jerk to you from what you write.
Yeah, when you say journalists, it's, you know, everybody thinks they can be one with Twitter and Facebook nowadays. You know, we're talking about actual, like, credentialed people, you know, when we talk about journalists who have been consistently published on a respectable platform. You know, I think, you know, you have to certainly make that separation. But, you know, I'll always get teased, you know, especially during football season. Just happens to be coincidence that, you know, one of my top favorite players is top fantasy quarterback. You know, whenever I draft Russell Wilson, and I'll hear Homer, you know. But it just so happens that, you know, the guy could be, you know, you could make an argument for him being the best quarterback in fantasy football, you know, over the last year or two.
All right, yeah, it's tough. I think you have to learn to separate the two. You just do in all facets, whether you're a journalist, whether you're a reporter, whether you're a fantasy owner. Like I said, you can't let the two mingle. You know, I know what question I always get asked is, what do you root for more, the Yankees or your fantasy team? Well, you know, it really depends on when you ask that question. You know, generally it's my fantasy team. I'll say it again. That's what's going to pay me some money. I love the Yankees, but they're not going to pay me anything. You know, so I generally root for my fantasy team to win here. On a Sunday night, the Yankees are on Sunday night, and they're up against my opposing fantasy pitcher. And if that opposing fantasy pitcher needs a win to win me my fantasy week, I'm rooting for the pitcher. You know, I'm certainly rooting that to get me what I need to go. It's one baseball game. Football is sometimes a little bit different because it's only 16 games. But in baseball, I'm certainly rooting for the fantasy team. It's just the way it is. You learn to separate these things. I think it also happens as we get older and maybe a little bit more mature rather than younger, where we're thinking with our maybe our hearts rather than our heads.
The thing is, though, you've always heard the question, which would you rather have your favorite team win a championship or you to win a fantasy championship? I think it's easier for ourselves to win a fantasy championship than to see the actual pro team win it.
Well, I think my first question would be...
You could be in a bunch of leagues and increase your
That's
odds.
That's one.
Number one. And just number two, it's you look at the, all the years that, like, you know, teams like the Toronto Maple Leafs or the San Diego Padres haven't won, and you realize how much more difficult it is in professional sports.
I would say this, if it's, when you ask me that question, how much money is that fantasy championship worth? It's a free league?
Right.
Oh, go Yankees. You know, if I'm not winning anything, but if it's a money league where I'm going to win, you know, a couple $1,000s, hey, screw the Yankees. I want to win. You know, give me the cold, hard cash. Like I said, the Yankees aren't paying any of my bills.
Well, fundamentally they are, because you write sports and broadcast sports for a living. So
don't ruin this for me, Scott.
Yeah. Okay. We'll bring in former Arizona Diamondback Rusty Rile next for his insider analysis right here on the Roto Experts Weekend Edition.
If you're playing daily fantasy basketball on DraftKings or FanDuel this NBA season, you need to sign up for Daily Roto. Built by a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. Better yet, you can save 10% off using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyroto.com/premium to learn more about their product.
Back here on the Roto Experts Weekend Edition, Scott Engel and George Kurtz. And if you want a chance to win a two tickets to a 2018 World Series game, go to dailyroto.com/DKMS and take a crack at playing free daily fantasy baseball. You can play every day. It's totally free. And the contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. Every 3 minutes, an American is diagnosed with blood cancer, and only 30% of all blood donor patients are available to find a compatible bone marrow donor in their family. So go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. Find out how you can help eradicate blood cancer and play free daily fantasy baseball with a shot of winning two tickets to a 2018 World Series game. Let's bring in my friend and fantasy baseball analyst, former Arizona Diamondbacks player, Rusty Rile. Rusty, how are you this morning, my friend?
Doing well. How are y'all?
Good, Rusty. So I was talking, me and George, about Matt Harvey and the fact that, you know, the way especially I see it, you know, being in the Mets clubhouse often and talking to some people there, is that the problem with Harvey is that he's no longer the Dark Knight as a pitcher, but he still thinks he's a Dark Knight mentally, and that was the big reason for his downfall. What do you make of the situation, and do you think that he could bounce back and be a quality pitcher here?
Well, I think one thing you have to look at as far as the Matt Harvey situation goes is, what is he going to do with his opportunity now? A lot of players that, you know, fall from grace with a very high ceiling due to injury like he had, you know, mentally you can't lose your edge. I have no problem with him thinking he's still the Dark Knight. I don't think anyone else should, because that's probably how he stays locked in. But where he can bounce back is maybe how he carries himself and his approach with his work ethics, maybe learning from some mistakes that could only be optical instead of, you know, did he ever do anything really wrong? Maybe not, but his attitude and what is perceived to be wrong by management and people that may want to keep you around, and when you're especially on the cusp with a 6 ERA, it's a deciding factor, because in their mind, they're probably thinking, well, hey, we can go get a guy, pay less money, and get maybe even the same or better results and not have such a headache at times, or someone that's not boosting the morale with the club. And you have to think about things like that. Is this guy an adder or a subtractor? And I think at the end of the day, the Mets decided he was subtracting from the team as a whole. And when you don't have the numbers to put together with morale, positive morale, or adding to the team, it's an easy decision for management.
Rusty, continuing with the Mets, how do you think, or how would you have handled the Jacob deGrom situation? Got hurt on the swing. They're not going to deal him, or likely not to deal him. They're going to start him his next start. today, 10-day DL, seems like most teams would play the cautious route, automatically put a player on the DL in this situation, only miss one start. How do you think they've handled it with Jacob DeGrom?
I think that you've got to respect what the player is telling you. If he can go in the bullpen and throw 15, 20 pitches pain-free, and it's only on a swing and his stuff is not being affected, he's not showing signs of pains. You know, our body is it's an incredible anatomy. Sometimes things hurt for no reason. Sometimes are blatantly obvious why they hurt. If Jacob DeGrom can look at them with a straight face and say, hey, I just won't swing, and this is all offensive related, and he can go out and give numbers, and there's nothing long-term. I mean, they've got specialists that will tell you, you know, especially when you have an asset like Jake DeGrom, what the best decision is. And I have confidence that this early in the season, the Mets are probably thinking, hey, if it's not severe and we're not taking a risk here, we're not in the playoff run just yet, it's super early, there's got to be some backstory to this that's saying, you know, he's okay to go out there. I think that from what I know, being in that situation myself, they'll make the right decision. And, you know, they won't always let a player overpower them because, one, he's not a doctor, and we all want to get out there and compete. But I think there has to be a large amount of confidence that this isn't going to extend into a bigger injury or a more serious issue, or they would probably err on the side of caution. I think they're doing the right thing. I really do. And nowadays, like I said, the technology would point to signs that they're paying attention and trusting their player and the doctors.
Shohei Ohtani, what's your scouting report of him so far? Is he this good as a hitter? And, you know, what are you expecting him from the rest of the way on both sides?
Well, I think that his upside's really in pitching. I really do, because of playing in Japan, knowing how they develop their pitchers, their mentality, their work ethic as a pitcher, the off-speed just concepts and the grooming of how they are able to control and their mindset. And you package that with a very above average fastball in the major leagues. I mean, if you look at the Anaheim Angels, so I went back to my dad's pastime, but the Anaheim Angels, you know, the LA Angels, they changed names so many times. You know, they're looking at this as a two-way star, but where is he going to be more influential in the long run? I think it's going to be on the mound. To answer your question, though, if you look at the splits, as most people would in fantasy, when the guy's not batting every single day, his average against lefties is not so great, but he's absolutely raking right-handed pitching. And I think they've got to make a decision. Do we give this guy at bats every day, no matter who's on the mound? Because he's got to learn and develop the concepts and become familiar with major league pitching. It is different. He'll probably adjust to that. He's had time to adjust that in the spring training games. I think next month will probably tell a lot with his batting approach, because pitchers are going to start to pick up on his holes and they'll pitch to those weaknesses. He hasn't had the time and he hasn't had the history of showing how he's going to get out of a slump, even if he gets into a slump on the right side. Just as an everyday player can tell you, hey, I'm going to hit my way out of this. That's what usually happens. But when you don't have that opportunity, because a team is taking a safe approach to you on the mound and your playing time because you're doing two things at a high level, I think that could get somewhat risky. I think they've got to eventually say, hey, where does this guy fit in long term? If he's going to hit, we've got to get him in the lineup every single day. I think he's for real at the plate, but I also think that them not allowing him to have those consistent at-bats, he's got half the at-bats as every other everyday starter, it's going to be a detriment to him in the long run. But on the mound, I think that's where he really holds the most value. What are your guys' thoughts? I'd like to hear y'all's thoughts.
George?
Oh, I mean, I think as far as Ohtani, I mean, it's a talent. We really haven't seen this as far as somebody who could do both, or is being allowed to do both. I think we've heard about players who could, But as being allowed to do both, I think he's fun to watch. You know, I think if I had to choose one, I'd rather him be a pitcher than a hitter. I think that's more important, especially for the Angels. But I want to see him do both. You know, I want to see him hit the ball 9 miles. I want to see him pitch a shutout. You know, I'm a fan of the game. I love seeing talent play. I think the Angels need to nurture him and make sure they're doing what's best for him long term. You know, I do think that it's – I have a hard time seeing him become a great hitter if you're only hitting 4 days a week. How much is he practicing? Is he thinking BP? Or is he not even hitting the day before and day after he pitches as well? Not only not in games, but not in BP as well. So I think the I just want to see him get the most out of his talent. I hope he can do that. I just think it's extremely tough. I don't think I know if there's anything tougher in professional sports than hitting a baseball. I think it's an incredibly difficult, you know, round bat, round ball, going 95 miles an hour and not worried about being killed. So love to see what he's doing, and I hope he can keep it up.
Talking about keeping it up, Rusty, what about Carlos Villanueva, who you recently picked up in the NFBC? Gotten off a terrific start, kind of surprising. You know, should we be selling on this guy because, you know, he's just going to crash and burn a little bit later, or can he keep this sort of pace up?
Well, we can't predict the future, but if you go back and you look at the guy's swing.
That's what we try to do here.
Yeah, I know, but how I'm going to do my predictions are based off his mechanics and his ability to control the zone. He's shown some signs of getting back into the swing of having better quality plate appearances, but his bat speed, his ability to hit to all fields is where I look at a guy and go, hey, this dude can play. And the fact that he can actually hold third base down defensively is going to pay big dividends in Andy Green's mind, because I know that he was a former infielder. That's important to him. It should be important to every major league team, obviously. But when you can get a guy in the corner that has the ability to play, you know, gold glove defense, and you got a guy that can hit to all fields in that league, yeah, he's playing in San Diego, but he also gets to play in Arizona. He also gets to play in Colorado. I like the guy. I like his bat speed. I like his plate coverage. And I think he, you know, can he set the world on fire forever right now, maybe playing his first full season? He's going to hit some skids, but at the same time, I don't really think we know what we have. So I think you got to hold on to the fire that's burning and ride him out. Should you sell high on him? I don't believe so. He could be a guy that hits 25 home runs and hits 280, 290. At the end of the day, when you look at where he's probably drafted, probably not even drafted, that's a high value, whether you're in a season long whether you can trade or not. So I think you got to wait at least till All-Star break before you can make a decision, like a guy like Villanueva.
Do we need to wait as long for A.J. Pollock? Looks like he's making a run at the MVP. Humidor is not affecting him. Pollock, it seems to be all about staying healthy, and he's doing it. What are your thoughts on Pollock?
Well, you know, I've had the blessings to see A.J. As a teammate at both levels, minor league and major league. I also got to see him come back from an injury. We all know the talent he has. And like you just said, the injury proneness, every time he goes out there, steals a base, dives for a ball, makes you grind your teeth a little bit. But at the end of the day, he's a five-tool player. And can he be an MVP type of player? Absolutely. I think that if he plays, you've already seen it. He started off a little hot. You're kind of worried now because you drafted him probably higher than maybe you liked. Or at least I thought we took a pretty high risk on him in our league. But at the end of the day, his ceiling has really not been reached. I do not think that A.J. Pollock has played his best baseball, and I think it's yet to be seen if he can play the entire season. I do believe that he will probably be in the top five for an MVP race, regardless of if he gets, you know, out 2 weeks with a hammy or a shoulder. As long as it's not, you know, the typical A.J. Pollock injuries, I think he's an MVP caliber player. And here's the best thing about it. Look who he's got hitting in front of him, okay? Look who's probably going to be hitting behind him, someone that can do some damage there. I know they rotate the fifth and sixth spot, but he also moves up into the two and three spot also. If Goldschmidt gets it turned around, which we know he will, and he stays healthy, that's what I like to see, is who's batting around the guy. Because he can do damage on the base pass, and we all know the ball flies out of Arizona regardless of the ball being in the humidor or whatever. I think it's going to pay huge dividends to his season if they can stay hot, they keep the lineup hot. AJ Pollock's on track to have an awesome season. I think he's a top five MVP guy.
Wow. Big words there. We all like Pollock fantasy-wise, but I guess you know, deal for him if you can, according to Rusty Ryle. What about Brandon Belt? He's hitting 300 with 6 home runs, 17 RBIs. Could Brandon Belt have his best year ever this season?
Well, you know, we've had our eyes on this guy. I've drafted him a few years, and he always seems to kind of fizzle out, whether it's due to an injury he never bounces back from. You know, the first baseman, so sometimes those guys could be hurting a little bit because they don't depend on their range, their agility as much. They can mask a lot of stuff. I think that, you know, he's had 3 or 4 years now of going through that. He's probably coming to his own. He's at that prime age, and he's always had the talent at the bat, at the plate. I think he is going to have his best year ever. I think he's probably got some new faces around there that helps that, with personalities like McCutchen and Longoria. We all know Bochy's a player's manager. And, you know, I think they're going to surprise some people, even with their performance in the win-loss column, which always, in my opinion, boost the mentality of a player when they feel like they're playing for something. It's San Francisco. It's not the best ballpark to hit in, but he is, again, left-handed, and that part plays a little bit better to those guys, and he's a good hitter. So I think that offensively, we're going to actually finally see Brandon Belt come alive, be the guy that we thought he was going to be 2 or 3 years ago. I think he's probably mature enough now mentally with his approach to be that 290, 300 hitter for the long run, barring, like I said, any crazy injuries that he's had like he did in the past.
Former Major Rusty, League. Go ahead.
How you feeling about – I know we only have about 2 minutes left here. Rusty, how you feeling about Justin Upton? Off to a little bit of a slow start, only slugging .415, which would be the lowest of his career. Justin Upton, is he going to turn it around, power hitter, streak coming?
So I'm glad you phrased it like that, because I listen to fantasy sports. I'm involved heavily in fantasy sports, and it never fails that almost all analysts on the radio – write him off about this time of the year or right before All-Star break. And if you peel back the onion a little bit and go look at the numbers, this guy, every single year, if you look at the numbers, he's done almost the exact same thing. Yes, he's streaky. Yes, he's going to strike out more than 130 times. It's a given. But let's think about this, guys. We're fantasy-minded. Are we going to turn our nose up at the potential of 25 to 35 home runs, and if he really wants to, can steal 15, 20 bases? I mean, it never fails. Who cares if he has a streak next week? Who cares if he's in a slump at the end of the year? We know what the guy's going to give us. And I've been on his team. I know his mentality. You go and you look at, well, what's his age? Yeah, he's getting up there in age. Well, here's what I know. His average home run distance right now is about 401 feet, okay? And Anaheim's not the best ballpark to hit in. Neither is Detroit. And if you turn back the page to last year, those are some pretty serious numbers for a guy that, quote-unquote, may be, you know, at the end of his prime. He's got a great
– Rusty Ryle, thanks a lot. Former Major League player with the Arizona Diamondbacks. Will join us frequently here on the Roto Expert Sunday edition. Rusty, thanks for the time.
No problem.
All right. We'll have two-turn pitchers coming up.